As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Some of our mantras, we talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. They compete. They're NBA champions. I couldn't be more happy for our players, for our team, for our organization, for our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah. It's big time.
This is Nerder, She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Yeah. You see all these What?
You can't make this up, man.
You can't!
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. I'm not sure what day this is coming out, but I think it's coming out on Friday. I'm Dave. This is Nerder, She Wrote. Mo and Seth are here. Before we get started, everybody go to theathletic.com/NBA show and subscribe for 50% off to The Athletic if you haven't done it already. I never push this stuff at the front of podcasts, and I remember today because it's such a screaming good deal. You get a year, 50% off. It's a great deal, so go and sign up. Fellas, how are you?
I'm great, man. I got a little foster puppy running around, a little Luca. Took him for a run today, and we still chase squirrels for most of the time.
It feels fully like the off season, and it's glorious.
And it's a short in one, Seth.
Yeah, I know.
Cause
I know.
Because we're literally like 2 or 3 weeks away from really stuff happening.
Yeah, I'm just remembering back to how just kind of pleasant that couple weeks is when sort of nothing is really going on and you just kind of chill at the office. You maybe play pickup once or twice a day. And then, hey, does everyone want to go see a baseball game this afternoon? And so those are kind of good days. You have just kind of decompress before everything gets going again. And then everyone starts showing up for open gym and we're right back to it.
Man, the Bucks staff was a lot more fun than the Clippers staff. I don't think we all got together. Listen, when the day was over, I was like, I'll see y'all later. I'm out.
I think a lot of that is probably Milwaukee's just easier to get around than LA. So it's like, oh, let's go to a baseball game. It's a 7-minute drive from the office.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Guys, there's nothing to talk about except for Ben Simmons, which we will talk about. But we figured we'd do a mailbag. And what do you know? Most of the questions were about Ben Simmons. So let's just right off the bat knock out some Ben Simmons talk. All the questions are essentially, what do you do with Ben Simmons? Where do you think he ought to go? What should they get for him? And I mean, it covers the entire gamut. And I guess, guys, let's start with what the heck is happening with Ben Simmons? Is he going to get moved? Because, you know, I've said this a couple of times now. I think that this is more likely to happen once the season starts. Like, I at this point, like you mentioned, Mo, we're almost at training camp. And I actually think this is a good thing for the Sixers to hang on to.
I don't know if it's obviously not a good thing in the way this is all carrying out with him threatening the holdout and things like that. Ultimately, if I'm the Sixers, though, I think the biggest thing they got to do is just call his bluff. The offers aren't there. I'm sorry. Like, we've seen all these people, rumored offers and things. Malcolm Brogdon and before TJ Warren got, you know, had surgery and or is behind in his recovery, like, and a pick. Just wasn't enticing, you know, like just the offers, Marvin Bagley and Buddy Hield, you know, for Ben. Like, you're just looking at that. And if you're the Sixers, you're just going like, no, dude, like we're not trading. And you know, for him to kind of say like, hey, I'm going to hold out. If you don't, I'm done. I'm through. Honestly, if I'm the Sixers, it's just straight away. Just go like, just call his bluff, man. See what happens. Even if he doesn't come in, see what happens.
Seth, are you kind of there with Mo? Just call his bluff.
Yeah, it's he's a really good player who teams think that they can leverage the 76ers into making a bad trade. And if there's one kind of executive in the league that I have the most faith in to not get leveraged, it's, you know, okay, he might not be the one, but he's one of the few that I have the most faith in that, like, he's never going to feel like, oh, I have to do a deal now. The deal is someone else is going to quote unquote crack and make a fair or even favorable for Philadelphia deal. And that's when the deal is going to happen. They're not going to panic trade him. They're not going to, you know, short sell. They're going to, you know, they know they have a very good player who is for various reasons, probably needs a change of scenery. Whether it's the fit with the roster or the fit with the coach, Mo, don't say anything. So, yeah, but that doesn't mean we have to do it now because, you know, what's the deadline? The deadline is really, you know, February sometime, right?
He's under contract for a while, too. No, so but, the deadline. I mean,
if you're Philly and you're in sort of we must win title soon, like going through him with him past the trade deadline kind of makes this, unless something changes dramatically from previous seasons, it makes this kind of a wasted season. They probably can't do that, but they can, if they go into the season with him on the roster, it's not the worst thing in the world.
You know, and I think the ultimate thing here is I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
That's okay. No. I think you're right that going into the season, look, I don't think that's the worst thing. This is a good team. Ben Simmons is a good player. He's going to be hard to replace, even if they trade him. You know, their defense is going to take a step back at the very least. Their offense in transition was great. I mean, half court, you know, it's got his issues. But I do think that what we saw in the playoffs and that loss to Atlanta is just being a bit overblown, right? I mean, Embiid was hurt. Danny Green wasn't out there. They didn't have a lot of depth. And yeah, with that, all of those things happening, Ben Simmons, all of his weaknesses are glaring because they stand out more, because they rely on him more, but they can't. And I get it. But also, this is a good team. I'd like to see it work.
Even that's a little, because they for some reason decided, no, we have to play a traditional backup center with our second unit. So you can't do the thing that everyone wants to see. Well, let's run offense through Ben Simmons as point center and get some stuff around him and have him play, you know, it's a facile comparison to have him play the Giannis role because they're really very different offensive players.
Absolutely.
But let's trot Dwight Howard out there and it, you know, kind of trotting Dwight Howard out there across several dimensions, basically lost them that series.
I'm shocked you don't find that Doc Rivers has a lot of creativity with his lineups. No, but you're right in that.
And I told you, don't say anything, Mo.
Well, look, you kept throwing it out there. It wasn't, you know, you threw four lobs up there. I avoided three of them. What do you want me to do? You know, the thing with Simmons, first off, is, as Dave and you guys are saying too, is if nothing else, if he doesn't improve, he's still going to be an all-time defensive player, you know, on a bunch of all-time teams, all defensive teams, all for the next, what, 6-7 years, assuming good health and everything like that. He's probably going to win a defensive player of the year award at some point. And, you know, you can win with that. You can make that work. And not just currently with this, with the way it's set up with Philly, probably not so much, needs to be in a different situation. But, you know, when you're looking at it with Ben Simmons, and this is the important thing here, is Philly is in a tough spot too. It's not like, hey, we're going to trade Ben Simmons and now we're going to go into a rebuild, right? Like, the trade they need to make needs to keep them as a contender. And I think that's why the reluctance in sort of the, hey, we're not going to take, you know, just some random deal or whatever, or we're going to just, you know, get rid of him for 50 cents on the dollar and things like that. I think that's the important thing that everybody sort of keeps missing on that when they're talking about this. And I kind of think, again, I'm going to go back to this holdout. I kind of think Clutch is overplaying their hand here a little bit. You know, the two times they've had closeouts, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but like, those guys were free agents, you know, and in that instance, and they were just kind of holding out going into training camp and eventually, and had the leverage. Here they're trying to create leverage that I don't think you can really create. And just Philly should just be like, fine, hold out. Just
at, yeah, he's level. Under contract.
And, just hold out.
And you've got an MVP candidate in Joel Embiid. I mean, this is the time in his prime. He's going to be 28 in March.
I thought you were going to say, well, MVP candidate.
Hey, listen, in my heart, yes. But you know, you've got Joel Embiid out there, and he's going to be 28 in March. And this isn't me saying he's dead by any means, but I mean, he's in his prime right now. So you're right, Mo. There is no taking a step back. You've got to take a step forward. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a better player, but you got to come away. If you trade Ben Simmons, your team needs to be better, especially offensively, or it's a waste of a trade because you're going to take a step back. I mean, this team, again, man, 2 years ago or whenever, when was the Kawhi bounce? I mean, was that 3 years ago? I don't remember. Yeah, okay. But this team is one lucky bounce away potentially from a conference final. I mean, this is a team that's been near the door to the finals. And again, had some bad injury luck last year. I hate to see it blown up, but it is blown up at this point. It's silly of me to even keep saying I hate to see it blown up, because it is. But if you're Philly, you have got to get better out of this. There is no, like, four or five picks, just who cares? You got to come away with at least one really, really good player, and maybe one really good one and another guy who is, you know, a high rotation guy.
And it's holistically really better. Like the easy trade people are throwing out there. So, CJ McCollum for, like, okay, yeah, CJ McCollum would be a nice defensive addition, a nice offensive addition, and fit well. And he's good. He's fine. He's maybe a borderline all-star in the East. But you take such a hit on defense that can't be all there is. Like, that doesn't, that, you know, locks you into, especially given, you know, contracts, that locks you into, what does John Hollinger say, is like going all in on mediocre. Like, you're fine. You're a 52 win team in perpetuity with that. That's fine. But they need to aim higher than that. Can I switch the convo just a little bit? Because,
sure,
you know, all the conversation about Ben Simmons is so focused on what he doesn't do. Yeah. Especially offensively. Let's talk about what he does do. And I think that's important to get to when a lot of the questions were, where would the best fit for Ben Simmons be? And I think that requires us to examine, he's going to go to a place where you can hide him. He's going to go to a place where you can maximize him and enhance him and use him to enhance the rest of your players. For me, the most interesting spot, and I don't, mechanically, it's hard to see how this works without a third team, I guess.
If you say Charlotte, I'm going to... Oh, okay. No, Golden Charlotte State would be awesome. Okay, yes.
No, and like this, oh, but you can't him and Draymond, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, the place Ben Simmons would be best would be a semi to non-structured read and react, high feel offense. And you're telling me you can't with, you know, Steph and Clay and Draymond and Ben Simmons couldn't run a whole lot of random action that teams would just not be able to guard.
Steph Draymond pick and roll with Ben Simmons as either a secondary screener or in the dunker. I mean, that's pretty good stuff. But the semi-transition stuff with him is going to be crazy.
What do you do with a Ben Simmons, Steph Curry dribble handoff? Like, you know, Simmons, like Ben dribbling at Steph Curry, like on the left wing. What do you do with that?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of, I mean, that's a good one. I'm going to be honest with you. The place I do think he fits most, I would find very interesting to see how it would work is actually Portland, but and it's not going to happen. I don't think it will, but for Dame, you know, in that sense of, I think you give him the chance to be that guy, you know, maybe it's going to look different than Giannis, but give him that own team. And then you still have CJ there to kind of be your closer down the stretch, very similar to the Chris Middleton role kind of deal. I think you have guys there that you could work with defensively and things and space the floor, Robert Covington and those, the myth of Robert Covington or however we want to phrase it. But like all of those things, you know, I think it's an interesting, like for me, I look at that team and I go like, that's a very different team. That's a team that takes a bump up defensively, you know, and something that they've been severely lacking. Adding a very dynamic playmaker, even more of a transition team than they've been in the past. Like, I think that would make them an interesting thing. Golden State would be fun as hell to watch. There's no question about it. But I also want to see it in Portland, you know, in that sense and see how that works. Like, I kind of just want to see it in, let's just see him with his own team. The hard thing with these things is we're always just used to how we've seen him for the last, 4 or 5 years and how he's played in this system. It takes imagination and guts. Cause you could be very wrong in thinking he can do it, but you know, to think, well, what if we put him in this way and think a little more creatively about how you're going to bring him along. I think that's the important aspect I would want to see. I think Golden State's great and fun, but I would just want to see him in Portland with just his own team.
I would want to see him in Charlotte as a center, but I'm absolutely insane. So
that would be one of the great league pass teams of all time.
It would be amazing.
Would they be more of a league pass team? Like, they're already number one. Do they move to zero? Like, what's the?
I mean, Charlotte already has my number one. Someone should trade for him because he's going to be a playoff, you know, MF in PJ Washington.
Oh yeah, so, he's going to be great. And PJ could play the four next to Ben Simmons at the five. Oh, it'd be so good. All right. So this is a mailbag.
You don't even really need to define positions out there. I mean, you think about that. You've got like, you know, you've got
Melo's what, 6'7"?
Yeah. LaMelo, Hayward, PJ Washington, Simmons and Miles Bridges. Like, who's playing what position? Do we care? Like, that's a fun group.
Yeah. Oh man. I might have to buy 2K just so I can make that team.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right. It is a mailbag. I promise it is a mailbag. So let's get to some questions. A friend of the program, Kirk Henderson, asks, who are some NBA players that really need to remove shots from their diet? And where do those shots come from? And then the reverse, some players who ought to expand their games this season and maybe bump up their volume in places that they're more efficient. Chris Middleton comes to mind as a guy who replaced a lot of those long twos in his diet with threes and immediately was just better because of it, right? So you guys got anybody off the top of your head that maybe needs to take some shots out of their repertoire?
Oh, I mean, I'm...
Go ahead. Mo's like chomping at the bit.
Well, it's two guys. Russell Westbrook and Giannis Antetokounmpo need to take the threes out. I'm done. Listen, I mean, especially the Giannis dribble pull up in transition three, it's a wasted possession.
I want to say
when it goes in,
you don't mean, because like taking away the three doesn't mean he never shoots a three, because if they catch the ball within the flow of the offense and they're wide open, they should shoot it because that is the function of the offense. And if you don't shoot it and the defense knows that you don't, then they never have to guard you ever. But
I mean,
you're right.
They defend it that way now. Like, it's not.
That's true.
Watch. Go watch the playoffs with Westbrook and see how deep his guy is in the paint, even in the flow of the offense.
The Lakers are going to be so funny.
I just think it's those shots. And because they're so dynamic and explosive in getting to the rim and things like that, even with these guys sagging off of them, I think just more of that. You know, for me, it's just take those two guys right there immediately. I saw that question and then it was like done.
Yeah. Seth, you got it. You got anybody?
I mean, one of the obvious ones in recent years has been Kristaps Porzingis post-ups. It's, you know, again, it's not a contested 12 footer is not magic just because you started with your back to the basket and turned around and shot. It's still a contested 12 footer. And the other one, maybe the more interesting one is, and this is, which should be no surprise to anyone who's heard my rants on this team, is the early clock pull-ups from Donovan Mitchell. It's it's something that for long stretches of the regular season, he kind of gets away from, and then they hit some adversity in the playoffs. And it's just like, you know, time to put the cape on. And it completely reduces so many of the highly skilled players on that team to spectators. You understand why someone thinks they have to, but we've seen it for four straight years in the playoffs and it drives me crazy. The other one we saw is it cut down a little sort of the second half of last year is like, speaking of early clock pull-ups, is like the early clock, like 30 footer from Trey.
Yeah.
Like that's just sort of the commentator cliche is, well, you can get that shot anytime.
Sure.
Well, yeah, you can get that shot anytime. So maybe come back to that with six on the clock if you need to. Why not? No, why do it with 18 on the clock when you haven't given the possession a chance to get something great?
Did you see much of that in the second half of the season after Nate McMillan took over?
Because it cut down a little bit.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it's anecdotal for me. I haven't looked at it, but it feels like it was less.
I looked at it. It was a little bit less. And then it seemed like even fewer, whatever in the playoffs. But then again, that could just be anecdotal. And, you know, some of that was how sort of easily they disposed of the Knicks made those kind of look like they vanished.
That's right. All right. Next question from @22Milto on Twitter. What are the main reasons that teams over or underachieve expectations by a lot historically? And we'll just say we'll throw injuries out from our answers there. And then which team might wind up over or underachieving this year? Specifically, I guess, in whatever this category is. I will say this. Three-point defense seems to be pretty random, and the Knicks had amazing three-point defense last season. So I'm going to steal everybody's answer, I'm assuming, and say watch for the Knicks' three-point defense and see how it affects their season. Because, I mean, they were spectacular last year, and it's all random. Seth, is that accurate? Fairly random.
Fairly random. Sure. All random is probably too far, but
too
fairly
far.
Random. Yeah. No, I think that was sort of broadly speaking, like the teams that over or underperform, you look and see, okay, the teams that that overperformed are the teams where the opponent shot 33% on open threes, and the teams that underperformed are the teams where opponents shot 42% on open threes. And, you know, what if you can predict that, go to Vegas and pick a number out of the roulette wheel. And,
exactly.
And, you know,
play the ponies. You know, Dallas last season, the Dallas Mavericks offense struggled to hit open threes. I mean, that might be something that swings for them, although I doubt it with, you know,
I mean, with that was a little bit their roster last year, especially with some of their guys were a little banged up. Like their sort of support players were a little banged up, and, you know, Josh Richardson, of course, being very disappointing in that. Like, we knew it was going to be a shooting downgrade from Seth Curry, but it was went from, you know, one of the great shooters in this era to almost a non-shooter, which was surprising considering that Richardson has been at least decent from downtown for the bulk of his career.
I wanted to answer the first part of the question, which is, about the over and under sort of expectations and things like that. Sometimes it's because we place the expectations too high for these guys, you know, and it's a level of, let's look at the Hawks, for example, right? The Hawks had a great, unbelievable run to the conference finals, right? Some people are going to have expectations of this team should be a conference finals team. There are going to be teams, people within their organization that are going to have that expectations. That may not be realistic. And I think that's kind of the thing with some of these expectations that are put on teams. It's a little bit unfair because it's like, we're putting that on them. And they're also just like, whoa, we're not that. I remember with the Clippers, you know, we were going on a run and we had a nice winning streak going, and like Stephen A. Smith goes on First Take or something and says, we're contenders. And one of the assistant coaches was in the video when he heard that. And he just threw his hands up going like, we're screwed. You know, he's like, if that's their expectations, we're screwed. We're not that, you know? And I think sometimes with the expectation games and who's going to swing and who's going to overachieve and underachieve, I think sometimes that's us and our inability to pinpoint it correctly than necessarily, you know, the teams. You know, there are teams that do, for sure, but then there's just teams where sometimes it's like, nah, we just, you know, poorly rated them.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What is a reasonable expectation? The Hawks are a fascinating team to me for me this year, because what should the reasonable expectation be? I think that, you know, a good kind of stretch goal, our seasons will have been very successful, is I think third place in the conference and, you know, make the second round of the playoffs. You know, I think conference finals, they're assuming health from Milwaukee and Brooklyn, they shouldn't be in the conference finals this year.
That team is so deep that it is going to do very, very well in the regular season. Like, potentially they sneak into the two spot in the regular season because they are going to be so deep. And, you know, it's not like if you're Milwaukee and Brooklyn, you really care about being the two versus the three. Honestly, you probably don't care all that much. I have them slated in that 3-5 spot. Part of it, it depends on Philly and what they wind up doing with Ben Simmons. If they stand pat and run it back, it's 4-5 between Atlanta and Miami. And I'm going to give Atlanta the edge just because of that. They're younger. They've got more depth, more likely to go for it. Although I will say if Miami's close and can get home court advantage, I mean, they're going to push for that, obviously. But I think that you're right, Seth. That's about what they ought to be looking for. This is a pretty good team.
Yeah, I think the for me, just even a successful season is home court in the first round. Like, it's not even, you know, yes, get out of the second round for sure. I mean, get out of the first round, excuse me.
Yeah.
But if you're if it's the 4-5 series and, you know, you have home court, you know, that's a pretty, in theory, relatively even series in that sense. Those two teams would be relatively close together. So I think that's the big thing. The funny thing, Dave, though, is, you know, again, this is us penciling. Hey, they should be
right.
We're expecting them to be better. We have, I think, more. It would be an interesting thing to look at just anecdotally to me. It feels like we have more teams that do really well one season and take a step back the next year than we do teams that continue the progression. And I think that's something that I worry about with the Hawks, you know, going forward. I can see that both happening. I can see them being really good continuing on. And I could see them also taking a step back and sort of, hey, they caught fire. Nate McMillan, the honeymoon's over type deal. Like, there's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
I think that that's a good point. I would say that when you have a talent as you know, a guy who's as talented as Trae Young is, it's going to buoy you to a certain degree from falling off too hard. And this is like the Knicks. I think the Knicks are going to be in the play-in range. They're going to be in 7-10 is how I feel. Part of it is looking back at how they, you know, sort of outperformed expectations last year. But also, they don't really have that elite guy that they're going to be able to lean on at any point. And I do think that Atlanta having that advantage will help them. Now, that being said, you're right, Mo. I mean, they could be in the play-in very easily. So, you know, it's a young team too. So, all right. You guys want to go to the next question? Here we go.
I really wanted to make an RJ Barrett joke.
Oh, well, RJ's good. So there's no joke there.
126th best player in the league.
All right, here you go. From Miroslav Shuk, should FIBA and the NBA meet at the middle and create a universal set of rules, or is it better this way? Mo, you've coached under FIBA rules, as have I. You're very well versed. How do you feel about the FIBA stuff? The one that always comes to mind for me is playing it off the rim. I think that the NBA, you just can't do that.
Yeah, I don't think you can in the NBA. I think I'm with you on that, Dave. The thing I would like to see the NBA adopt is more of the flow of the game. I want to see them. What I want is not even them necessarily meet in the middle in terms of rules. I just want the officials to ref the game the way FIBA games are refed. And I also want to bring in the intentional foul or unsportsmanlike foul for any time you stop a fast break on a foul, the way we've been seeing the take foul, because we need to eliminate that out of our game. Like, now
play the advantage,
whatever, however we want to do it. But I think I want to see the game officiated the way the FIBA game is. We saw in the Olympics, they let more go. Defenses have a little bit more of an opportunity to, I don't know, defend. And it makes a big difference in how the game is played. And I think that's going to be an important aspect, because right now everything has swung too much to the advantage of the offense.
Seth, you got anything there?
Just use the FIBA ball.
Oh,
it's very, very pleasing to see the spin on the ball. So
I love the two tone, man. It's where it's at. Moulton makes a good basketball. I think that the flow of the game, like, I love a 40-minute game and no live ball timeouts. You're not going to get that in the NBA. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Television is too important. But the bigger stuff is hand checking should be okay. We got to bring it back. Like, let the guys actually play some defense on the perimeter. Listen, you can hand check without fouling. They do it in international basketball all the time. It works out totally fine. And like you said, Mo, trust your referees, man. Those guys know the game. And the spirit of the game, I think, matters a little bit more than the NBA will allow it to. And part of that's probably all the tech owner, you know, billionaires wanting everything done black and white. And it just doesn't work because basketball has a lot of art.
No, but it has to be, because part of that is, if you're not, when you're talking about rule changes and like your first thought is, well, what would Daryl do? You're just asking for, you know, we're well past the point of the, of there being some sort of like, you know, smoky room agreement of everyone's only going to compete to this point. No, people are going to, at least some of the teams are going to compete to the edge of the letter of the law. So if you're not considering what competing to the edge, and that's on the court, that's off the court. You have to, if you're not considering that, you're just asking for trouble.
This is how we got to the thing that they're now trying to fix with the flailing bodies, the non-basketball movements, right? And I think that you never get to that point if you allow referees to not call things that are obviously not fouls. So now we're having to go back and re-legislate things that probably never would have existed if you allow the referees to use their common sense. And I get it. I get the point there, but I do think
angle shooters are going to shoot angles, and there's always going to be an angle.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a little bit of, you're both are correct, you know,
sure,
in that instance,
yeah.
You know, and it's, right. It's kind of hard. I'm very interested to see how these rules changes go into effect. And I hope it's something that the refs stay with all year, just because this isn't basketball anymore at times. You know, guys like Trae Young, who literally just jump into a defender and then pop up, you know, it's a foul on the defender when the defender really has nothing else to do. You know, I saw plays where, you know, Paul Millsap took a three and then leaned to his right, because the guy who closed out on him did a great job. Closed out to his shoulder, completely avoided him, gave a good contest. Millsap draws the foul, got three free throws out of it. And I think that's the stuff we need to clean up. And I think that, like, you know, hopefully that's going to be an offensive foul the way it's supposed to be, the way I've read those rules for next year. So we'll see how it goes, man. But it'll be interesting. I just hope we give defenses more of a chance.
The NBA created offensive eminent domain and basically said that defenders are not entitled to any space ever. You never are allowed to do anything. If the offensive player wants that spot, it doesn't matter. It's theirs.
And you're taking me back to my real property exam when you start talking about eminent domain. I would say the one, so this is sort of a combination of a few things, but Mo was talking about like the flow of the game rule. I think one rule that I think would be really sneakily helpful for that is, you know, is it? I don't think it's still the rule in FIBA, but at one point you could just, like on an out of bounds, you just take it out of bounds and go, right? You don't have to, the ref doesn't have to check it. Sure. Just they called it this way. Let's take it and go. You know, like that will speed the game up. B, like if one of the things that people often find distasteful is the complaining about every call, right. Which is sort of part of the angle shooting. And if it's like, if we're get it out, get it in, let's go. You don't have time to do that. So it's like, okay, if you want to complain, you can, but you're playing 5-on-4 and coach might have something to say about that.
And it would cut down on replays because they'd be forcing the ball in. Man, Chris Paul, that would be a new stat to track. You'd have to track time for inbound for guys, because I bet Chris Paul would be Steph Curry-like with his release on those inbound passes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
All right, last question. Not a serious one, which is good. From friend of the program, Britt Robatista. If you could pick a single NBA season, including the playoffs, to watch for the rest of your life, which season would that be?
I am going with the Golden State Warriors first championship run. It was just so delightful to watch just kind of the way they played basketball, you know, ball movement, cutting and things like that, backdoor cuts and all of that. We had the invention of the death lineup during that stretch and things like that. Like, I'm going with that squad. That's the season I'm going to watch, not the 73, like just too dominant kind of deal. The first year was its purest year in its purest form. And I think that's the one I'm going to go with.
You're like a Warriors hipster here.
It's weird.
I'm not sure I can pick a specific season. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and pick kind of a group of seasons. And it's going to be the 7 seconds or less Suns. Because of just the operatic tragedy of how each of those seasons has ended. Oh, it's just like, oh, Joe Johnson, no. Or like, oh, don't leave the bench. No, he did it again. So just kind of like hoping, you know, you watch a Game of Thrones and hope the character doesn't make the same stupid decision. Nope. Still did it. Still didn't realize that there was a huge crossbow on those boats. I think that's the plus. Obviously, it was just a, you know, fantastically entertaining team, including, you know, Sean Marion basically inventing the modern power forward position on the fly.
Yeah. For me, it's 13-14. It's the beautiful game Spurs. I mean, it's just the peak that the sport has ever been played is that team. The way they played on both ends, some of my favorite players of all time. Just in the league, period, that time. Well, yeah, that team in particular. I mean, look, man. Manu Ginobili is probably my favorite player ever, right? But Boris Diaw, another guy that I really love. I mean, that Spurs team, I really, really love.
That was a fun team. There's no question about it. Like, that was a fun group of basketball to watch.
I was staying up till 4 or 5 a.m. to watch the Spurs because I lived in Europe during that season. And so I'll always think about, like, that season in particular means a lot to me personally because I was stealing stuff from Pop for my team that I was coaching in Europe. Little motion stuff and 1-4 flat. I was just literally just ripping it right off. So that to me is the best season in NBA history. If I was going to go back to when I was a kid, it's probably that first Bulls title, I think, because it sucked. Because I love the Bulls like every other kid that lived in a non-NBA market because I got WGN. And I watched the Bulls getting their asses kicked by the Pistons multiple years in a row. And to watch them win that title actually meant a lot. It was cool.
Can you imagine kind of peak Larry Bird in the Twitter era? Just like, oh, I'm going to shoot the game winner from there.
Yeah. Because like guys will do stuff that Larry Bird was just doing every night, you know, but it's a different guy every night. I think about this a lot, like the stuff Jordan would do on a random Thursday night. And and we get a lot of that. There are more great players in the league now than there were then. And I think that's why the Magics and the Birds and Jordan stood out so much.
Yeah.
Because they were so head and shoulders above the rest of the guys. I mean, the league right now has more talent than it's ever had, top to bottom. But you're right, man. There's just nothing like, I mean, imagining what people would do with the, you know, that Bird game against the Hawks. Because somebody would catch on. Somebody would catch on. Right? Like, I mean,
the lefty.
Yeah. Somebody would have caught up on that.
Portland, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was Portland, not Atlanta. But someone would have caught that in like the second quarter and it would have been all over Twitter. That would have been fun. And I generally think Twitter kind of sucks.
I think Larry Bird is playing left-handed, guys.
Right.
Yeah. Is it me or did Larry Bird? Yeah.
We're going to have to just set up an Athletic Live tweet of that game. And I want to just see what comes out from it.
Well, I mean, you know that KOC Kevin O'Connor would come out going like, should Larry Bird play left-handed? Switch hands.
All right.
Like Ben Simmons, he's hurting the team by playing right-handed.
And we come full circle. That's it. We're going to do it. That's going to do it for today's show, folks. Don't forget about all the other shows we got at The Athletic. Football season's coming up. The Athletic NFL show is awesome. We're trying out some stuff with the Daily Ding here on the Athletic NBA Show feed. So give us some feedback. Let us know what you think about that for this upcoming season, because we want to keep you guys informed and on top of everything. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you guys soon.